you know, the fact that this woman who worked an obscure job at the Department of Agriculture gets kind of brought into this whole thing by some, you know, conservative blogger who posts part of a speech that she gave, takes everything out of context. She ends up falsely accused of discrimination. And then it becomes this huge political firestorm in Washington. And then they still just can't figure out how to contain the damage from this thing. And even by yesterday, Chris, they still hadn't figured it out. They bring her in there to offer her not only her old job back, but if she wants it, she could possibly have a newly created job in a department called Advocacy and Outreach, which is tasked with, you know, improving the Agriculture Department's civil rights record and improving its image. It's a job she would be ideally suited for. I would imagine they would compensate her pretty well. She could have had either that job or her old job back. They lobbied hard. Then, you know, we were there all morning while this meeting was going on, where they were trying to win her back. They scheduled a news conference at 10 a.m. yesterday, and we all figure, well, they've scheduled a news conference. They must be announcing some good news and that she's coming back and all is well.
Right.
They get out there.
Yeah, not happening.
Not happening. Yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, I don't know who at the department thought that a news conference would be a good idea, but I'll tell you, after that, you know, you saw both of them looking fairly uncomfortable up there.
Right.
It's one of those surreal
Washington moments where they have a news conference to say she's rejected a job.
Yeah, it was really extraordinary. I mean, we looked around at each other and thought, what is going on here? And it's still, I mean, she laid out some reasons why. They're fairly general, and they, you know, you don't really get at the crux of why she's not coming back. I get the sense that it's just too much under the bridge at this point, too many hard feelings. It just became too much of a scrum within the department and a nasty piece of infighting there, and also just a political nightmare that they just couldn't get their heads around and didn't deal with very well.
And
I think everybody is injured by it.
And sometimes we talk about government moving so slowly. This was one where people moved so quickly in response to this, and it ended up not being based on correct information.
That's right. They moved way too quickly. I think they were, in a lot of this, Chris, traces back to the department's history. They have a history of having problems with, they just have had a tough time grappling with the issue of race, dealing with black farmers throughout the years. The department's been accused of basically discriminatory practices. They've launched an entire, you know, investigation. They've gone through several class action lawsuits that are well documented. It's just got a long history of problems with this, and I think Secretary Tom Vilsack was very aware of that, all too aware of that, when this whole thing happened, and I think he was very eager to make a public statement that, hey, it's a new day, and we're not going to tolerate this kind of thing. But then, of course, he gets the real facts, and it becomes a real nightmare for him.
And then Politico reporting today that he actually thought about resigning, and I've seen a bunch of bloggers saying, hey, you know, that's just more almost CYA kind of stuff rather than anything being real.
Well, it could be that. Yeah, it could really be that. And I think whenever something like this happens at any department, I think that it's kind of almost pro forma for the
right.
secretary to offer his or her resignation. Now, Tom Vilsack, you know, what the strange part is about this, he had a very good reputation coming in as a pretty, you know, decent and honest guy. And I don't know if this really sullies that, but it sure was clumsily handled by both him and his aides. And I think they have to take a long look at themselves and figure out, you know, how do we grapple with these situations? It is not easy to do, especially in this town. But you've got to have some political savvy, and I think not much was shown here.
Well, and I don't mean to blow wind up your guys' skirt, but because you guys are using it as an ad now. But it also reminds us of the importance of journalism. And hey, if something's just posted on a blog, you need to think twice about some of this stuff.
You really do. I mean, this thing got posted; it became viral. And it took everything she said completely out of context. It was a nightmare, and it was a nightmare that blew up in a matter of minutes. And you do have to really be very careful. I mean, we are always in a rush to get things first, to get things on the air, and make sure, you know, and get just basically be competitive, right? But this is where it really bites you, and you've got to be very careful. We're always grappling with that. and this is really maybe one of the best lessons. You could really teach journalism students a lot about this case.
One of the other stories I wanted to touch base with you on is this egg recall, and it seems like you often get assigned the task of the government not doing its job completely. We've talked for weeks about the oil. Now the government grappling with this very difficult task of what is it? It's like a half a billion eggs out there that may be potentially contaminated. And how do you deal with that?
Yeah, how do you deal with it? I mean, you essentially, what the government has to do is to kind of act like a detective and work backwards. You know, they have to trace back to where this outbreak started. They've pretty much done that. I mean, they've traced it to two farms in Iowa, run, I believe, by the same company. And they've done some of the detective work there. Then they have to basically look at all the places where this company sold eggs to, restaurants, grocery stores. They've done that. They've basically cast a net over 17 states, and that's where the recall covers. But you know, part of the problem here, Chris, is the way the government is kind of structured to oversee this industry. You know, the meat industry has got a very tight rein on it by USDA. Not so much the egg industry. USDA basically oversees the size of the eggs and makes sure they're big enough to put on the shelves. But it's the FDA that actually looks at the safety of the eggs. And that's a little bit confusing. It's too much, you know, it's not enough streamlined oversight by government agencies. And we've had experts talk to us this week, consumer experts, who say that's got to change. They've really got to streamline that.
Well, and I know you had one expert tell you, don't believe the labels. And if something says cage-free, cage-free may essentially has no legal, it doesn't mean anything.
That's right. This woman, Patty Lavera of the group Food and Water Watch, they're a consumer group. She basically says it means literally what it says. It means the chickens weren't in cages. And so that's about what it tells you. It doesn't tell you much else about the farm. Doesn't tell you about what they do at the farm. Doesn't tell you about whether chickens are in sanitary conditions or not. And believe me, if I could describe to you some of the conditions that they describe on what, you know, some of these chickens were in, you know, this is a family show. It's pretty gross.
Yeah, we'll avoid that. Where people may be, munching on something, and let's just not go there.
Lunch hour.
One of the other stories is the SeaWorld. A couple months ago, this trainer gets killed down at SeaWorld by a killer whale, and now there are questions about whether this is a safe job at all.
It really is a kind of a staggering story in that way, because so many people go to SeaWorld. It is wildly popular, and within SeaWorld, you know, I don't know if you've ever been down there, but you want to go see the killer whale.
Yeah.
You want to see what they're doing with those things. But here's the problem: in their quest to make this such an entertaining show, according to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, which came out with this report, they're putting trainers at risk. They're making them go too close to these animals. I mean, you see the video. They're riding them. It's wild to look at. It's great to look at. But according to OSHA, it's too dangerous. And they've got to, OSHA says they should really be barred from performing with the animals, even if they stay dry. Unless some new safety provisions are made, things like physical barriers, decking, new decking systems, oxygen supply systems, things like that. Now, SeaWorld is pushing back on that, saying basically OSHA doesn't have a real understanding of the humane aspect of this and how they have to care for these animals by getting up close to them and touching them. And it also, SeaWorld is pushing back on some of the accusations that they were unsafe.
It seems a little bit like this is I saw the report on Monday, and I was like, yeah, of course these are killer whales, for goodness sakes. It's a dangerous job.
It is. I mean, look, these things are very ominous-looking animals, and apparently if you train them right, they can be fairly benign. But this one whale, this is another part of the story, this one whale, Tilikum, had been involved in incidents in the past where three or four people had been killed. And according to OSHA, SeaWorld knew that and still took too many risks. Again, SeaWorld denies that, but that's part of the story as well.
Well, in Outside Magazine, if you haven't read the piece, they actually did a whole profile of the whale, him or herself, I don't remember. What a sad life that poor whale has led. But from the time it's captured all the way down, I mean, just it's...
Yes. I know it's been transferred to several different tanks and holding areas and parks. And it has not been a very good existence for that whale, and that is part of the story as well.